हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनोभुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
Thus he realizes his own self without false identification with matter and without affection for material possessions. Right, so then false identification, the sambandha, and without affection for material possessions, the prayojana. Right, so then the activity will be correct. Such a great devotee is never in trouble with others because he sees everyone from the platform of spiritual understanding. He sees himself and others in the right perspective. So he won't be in trouble because he's not trying to, how he can get something from others. Or there's not going to be a common fight over material facilities and all that. It means it doesn't mean that he's not in trouble. It doesn't mean that others don't make trouble. You know, it does happen. But in general, we see is that much of the time, even the materialists, they appreciate the devotees. Like that. Like it said, you know, Sanatan Goswami, it didn't matter who it was, the common person or the saintly persons or anybody, everybody appreciated. So there was no... they all appreciate it because there's nothing to gain from them materially, because people only fight over material things. There's no shortage of spiritual, right? It's not like there's a shortage on Brahman, and so we have the exclusive rights, here.
Rationed.
Yeah, it's only flows what on they kind of like, what are they up there, like 7th Avenue or something like that, but over on 5th, it's nice. It doesn't really happen over there. 271. Person who has given up all desires for sense gratification, who lives free from desires, and who has given up all sense of proprietorship and is devoid of false ego, he alone can attain real peace. Now here we've taken it back another step. Right? He's not bothered by the insensitive desires. So that's only happening because he's given up what's the goal of something, right? That the sense gratification is not for him, it's for Krishna. Right? He's already given that up. So, but now he says he lives free from desires. So it could mean free from material desires, though the desires still come up. But it also would mean naturally just with practice there'll be less desires, because if the mind knows that it doesn't matter what it brings up, you're going to give it the same answer. Then it starts to not look as enthusiastically, right? Like that. So giving up all sense of proprietorship, right? So then we take it back into the ownership means your identity is Sankarshan, right? So now we've done Aniruddha Prajumna Sankarshan, devoid of all false egos, so he's not identifying with that. You could also say proprietorship is mine, is also is Prayojana, and devoid of false ego is Sambandha. Right, so both from the ideas of having desires, on the subtle platform, or from the element of the gross or the external, the identification with the external and the identification of enjoyment from the external. Or this is my facility externally, and I identify with that too. I can enjoy from that. Does that make sense? So, real desirelessness is the desire to satisfy Krishna. To become desireless means not to desire anything for sense gratification. In other words, desire for becoming Krishna conscious is actually desirelessness. To understand one's actual position as the eternal servant of Krishna, without falsely claiming this material body to be oneself, without falsely claiming proprietorship over anything in the world. is the perfect stage of Krishna consciousness. So we understand we're servant of Krishna. That means we're not thinking we're the body and we don't have proprietorship over anything, right? Because you could also say, okay, we say about the body, but everything connected to the body, right? Because the field is what we work with, right? It means there's the field of action. Then there's the person who's acting. He's the soul. Then he's going to act with the senses, right? Does that make sense? You know. So then there's the endeavor, and then there's the sanction of the Lord. So within the sambandha aspect, then you're going to have the field, which is your environment, the body and senses, and you. Right? So if you think I'm serving the Krishna, okay, that's one of the aspects. But do you think, understand your body is also not? Means, you know, means that we're not the body and we're not the facilities. Because I may say, okay, I'm servant. I may even accept the body as, but do I accept the facilities also?
So you see yourself as servant, but that your
all my stuff is mine. Yes. Don't touch it. Yeah. Don't touch this stuff. It belongs to my spiritual self.
Okay.
Right. You understand? So it's just a matter of extending it. Because when we say the field, we mean the body. Because the body includes anything connected with it. Right? So there may be an ownership over it, or there may not. But in any case, whatever the body can perceive is where we're going to try to enjoy ourselves. Right? You look. Wherever you are, you will look what I can enjoy here. Even if you're sitting in the train station, the train station is not yours. But you look around. Is there someone you could talk to? Is there something you could read? Is there something you could eat? You know, you'll look around. You know, or is there something funny going on you can watch? You know, it's just, you know, so therefore the enjoyment is there, though proprietorship is not. You know, but let's say in the house, it's, yeah, enjoyment's not necessarily there. Your proprietorship is. Yes, yes.
Desire for becoming Krishna conscious is actually desire, that's nice.
Yes.
So, in Krishna consciousness also someone may have like desire, he's probably a helper in the kitchen or something.
Right.
And he wants to become the cook or, you know, something like
that. Yeah, yeah.
And that both of the things are there, that he wants to satisfy Krishna and he wants to cook. But that one sense of thing is there, that I would be the kind of leader.
Oh, okay.
So how does...
Well, the thing is well, the leadership, why the leadership? Okay, so for the cook, then we're in charge of the kitchen rather than just being assistant. But why would we want to be in charge? You know what I'm saying? If it's just because of prestige, then that we want to cook for Krishna, that's good, but do we want to be in charge for prestige, that'll be the weak part. So it's mixed. Right, so it's desirelessness with desire. You know, that's why it's said, you know, there can be action and inaction. You know, even though there's or inaction and action. So the point is that that you're cooking for Krishna. That's inaction and action. It means the activity is going on, but it's not creating any material karma, any result. But at the same time, because of the prestige, then there's action in the inaction. Even though you're doing it for Krishna, so it's inaction, you still, there's the action of the prestige. So it'll be mixed. Right? But if it's you want to be in charge of the kitchen because you know something about kitchens and how to run it, and the kitchen will be run much better for Krishna, like that, then it can be looking at it that aspect is there. But you have to judge very carefully, because then you don't mind assisting. But you just know Krishna will get a better result if you were managing it. You know what I'm saying? And then if you are managing it, everybody will be happy because you're running it nicely. You know, so it's not about who's in charge. Does that make sense? So you just have to analyze and see. That's why you have these, you know, all these different angles, so that you can, from one angle, we may be able to catch it. You know, like we're saying here, yes, I'm not the body. You know, I'm the soul, I'm not the body. But what about our stuff? You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing there. But if it's seen in connection with Krishna, then there's a reason. That's your quota to serve Krishna with, so why would they be taking it? You know? In any case, the point is that if they're saying they're using it for Krishna, that's nice, but it already is connected to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Like, we always have to think. We plant, before we had fences, you know, we had, you know, so many flowers in the garden, and then all the local devotees would come and pick them. And then we say, you know, hey, you know, you can't come pick the flowers. It's just, but they're for Krishna. You know, saying, yeah, you know, so it's Krishna, everything's Krishna's, you know, like that, at least outside the house, it's all Krishna's. Yeah. Like that. And he says, no, but you're going to take them home. He says, yeah, we'll offer them to Krishna there. He says, well, that's your worship. You know, it's one thing if they were picking flowers for Radha Madhava, for making the garlands or something like that. No, it's for their own home worship. And these are here for our worship. So it's not a matter of, you know, we're making the effort to grow them. He says, you can grow them also. You know what I'm saying? So there's always this kind of, you know, it's all, you know. But, you know, their house is another question. You can't just walk into their house and, you know, pick up some of their rice and take it all. What are you doing? That's our right. No, it's for Krishna.
Is it a valid argument that I'm a Kshatriya, so I have to engage my nature, so I have to take charge of this kitchen?
Your name was Bhima, maybe. But otherwise, kitchens aren't famous for being having Kshatriya in charges.
Okay, but
unless the whole country, you see, the whole country's a kitchen. One very large kitchen. This is the, you know, I mean, we're the kitchen religion, so I guess you could have the kitchen country. Maybe Italy. Italy's the kitchen country, right? So therefore the
farm could be considered a kitchen, part of the kitchen. Will the produce come?
Yeah, but they
there?
Don't run a farm either.
No. So let's take the temple. Would it be
means any aspect you can run it from. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Because you have the devotional aspect anyone could run. The Brahmin is running it, you know, because it's a place of, you know, how you say, devotional cultivation. So it's knowledge, it's practice. Mm. So he would relate there. The Kshatriya, because of the administrative aspect and seeing that everything's organized and going nicely. The Vaishya, because it takes money to run all that and management, so he could relate to that side of it. The Shudra, also, again, just the devotional, though maybe not the element of knowledge or organized study or other things like that. It would just be the devotional practices. Mm. So, depending upon what it is, anybody could run a temple, technically. But the problem is, the bigger it is, then it more gets, you have to have this breakdown. You know?
So we're back to seeing more parameters and finding balance.
Yeah, yeah. But it's very natural. I've seen a few, very few temples that Kshatriya kind of in charges. Most are like Vaishya. Because they know it means much of the time the reason they're there is because they can raise the money.
Yeah.
They can manage, they can raise the money. You know. And their control of people is just pragmatic. You know, so that's always a problem. And things that deity worship is there because you're supposed to have it, or you have it better than others, it's a prestige issue. You know, we have three altars, you know, that kind of thing. That's not so big now, but in the 80s, that was the thing. If you were a temple president, you had to have three altars. Everybody else did. You know, so then, like that. Brahmins run temples, but a lot of the Brahmins aren't good managers, so then something falls apart managerially. So they'll always replace, because generally speaking it's money, so they'll always replace him with a Vaishya. Like that. It's just kind of the pattern. But the point is it's supposed to be a cooperation. You know what I'm saying? You're supposed to have all three aspects. So if one person can do all three, that's better. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But if he can only do one, then he needs the other elements. You know, the point is it's complete with all of that. Mm-hmm. So you want to see that all those aspects are there. If one person can do it, great. If two people, okay. If three, whatever it takes to get it done. You know, just like the Sunday feast has to be cooked. So one person could cook everything, or two people, or 10. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. But as long as it gets done.
The sense of proprietorship. Kind of thing that we were trained, raised, and it's natural.
Yes. And you should expand it and make more of it and share it with your relatives.
So, the thing that we're trying to do in Krishna consciousness is just the opposite. Can it come with the training, with the sadhana, or should it come from the intelligence? Will it come out on its own with the practice as we get purified? Or shall we make a separate endeavor just on that particular point?
I would say yes to everything before. You know, but the separate endeavor, it's already included in Krishna consciousness. That's the point that Prabhupada is bringing up. There is no separate endeavor. Because the endeavor, according to nature, is for Krishna, it already includes what we would call the separate endeavor. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is, the principle is there's no proprietorship, but there's that doesn't mean that you don't have a quota. Right? So that's the first verse of the Ishopanishad. Everyone has their quota. That quota is based on their nature. Right? So if they're in a position, let's say like grihasthas, if they accumulate facility for the household life, that is their nature. So what they do, as long as it's within their nature, you know, and they're actually going to use it, then you could say it's within their quota. Right? Because it's according to their ability, they got it according to proper means, so then it would be their quota.
The example is always used with this couple of Pramanujacharya disciples, grihasthas, in comparison to the sannyasins.
Yes,
grihasthas had so much wealth and they were not attached. So practically applying it in our own life is very difficult. Let's see.
So when does it become easier? That's when you have as much gold as she had?
Exactly.
She had so much.
Take it. You left
again with nothing, then you become attached to that. No, she had the other one. Then you take it back and they make smaller ornaments. And then you have both sides. The point is that we start with it's used in Krishna's service. Powerful finger there. Okay. Well, it just means that as it means just like this. You have proprietorship, right? Or you have peace. Proprietorship. Peace.
Both.
No, that won't work. That's like cake. Eat it. Cake. Eat it. You get one or the other. I'll eat half, keep half. It's just a matter of appreciating that how we think is what gives us trouble. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes quote this one devotee's father when he said to him before he became a devotee, he said, "What makes you happy makes you crazy." Right? Yeah. So the idea is that we're in anxiety. That's why we've taken up Krishna consciousness. But that anxiety is becoming because of the bodily conception. So that's a little easier to, okay, because no one's going to come along and take your body away, right? You know, generally speaking, you know, so, you know, you have control of that. So you kind of, you know, the soul's there, you know, you don't have to worry that there's some kind of demon that's going to come and suck your soul out. Like that, you know? So it's great in the movies, but, you know, it doesn't happen. You know, or that they're going to take your body away, you know, you wake up one morning and you're somebody else and stuff like that. You find out you're in the next neighbor's house, you know, like that. You know, stuff like that. It's not going to happen. So these things are there, but then the next step is the field, the full field. Because the body is the field, because the body is what's connected to the field. You know what I'm saying? It's your body that went down and signed the papers. Therefore, it's your house. You know what I'm saying? The soul didn't sign the paper. The soul desired to, therefore the body, you know, engage, the three modes of nature engage the body. So, but then as it extends, then it gets harder. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is as you extend it, it gets more and more entangled. That's what I said before, is that one... Oh no, that was in the Bhagavatam. Yeah. It was saying is that the girl is very attractive, so the boy becomes attracted to the girl. So that's the first step. Then he'll work very hard. Right? That's the second. He'll accumulate, you know, house and facility to have children. Right? Then he's got the house, the land. He's working on that. The children are growing. Then, you know, they're going to make friends and that and expand. And they'll have wealth, you know, as they go along. So it's just that in this way it gets entangled because it's I and mine. And it's just like there's attachment to the children, right? But then there's, in its own way, more attachment to the grandchildren. You know what I'm saying? So the farther it expands, the more... Does that make sense? So the idea is that we understand the process, so we're connecting the results, so that connects the whole process.
Okay. See? Moving right along.
Without the tiger, shook his peace. Okay. One who is situated in this perfect stage knows it because Krishna is the proprietor of everything. Everything must be used for the satisfaction of Krishna. So the proprietorship is false because it actually belongs to someone else. So now if we have, let us say we're staying in someone's house while they're away on vacation, that we get attached to their house and their possessions and all that. So is that going to be a problem? Yeah. So that's the thing is, all this belongs to Krishna, but we're claiming that it's ours. So that's why there's a problem. So, but that you have a quota, that's not a problem.
So you say that our process is that we love Krishna so much that we can give it up on our own instead of...
Well, yeah, yes, but at the same time you're not technically giving it up because it's not ours to begin with.
But the identification makes the illusion. So
yes, it does. But that means start from that principle. Then it makes things work easier. Because if it's like, it could be yours, but we have a philosophy that says it's not. But the thing is it isn't ours. Even if you think it is, even if you don't practice this religious process, it doesn't mean that it's any different. Right? It still belongs to God. But it's just the way it is. It means he's created the world, so the whole world, everything belongs to him. So it's just a matter of we're here and then we'll go away, because if it was ours, we should be able to take it with us. You know what I'm saying?
Can we come back?
Oh, I see. So that's why the infighting is so strong, because the same people are coming back and claiming the same piece of land. Okay, now I get it. Okay. That's why you have to remember. Remember, hey, now don't end up over there. I had a question on that. When it says the land of milk and honey, honey I understand, but what does milk mean over there? Because all they had that I know was camels and sheep. So what did that mean, milk?
Never done camel milk?
Honey, I understand.
Huh? I said it was New Zealand, she said it was Belgium.
It is neither.
Belgium.
They identify as the ideal land.
Ideal
land.
So
they have a lot of honey and milk, that's what they can.
No, but I'm saying, what is this milk?
It's an illusion.
Oh, but you do have bulls, right? Because that's the thing. And you also have donkeys, right? You don't steal your neighbor's donkey. But the discussion is about if your neighbor's bull falls or oxen falls into your pit. So that means there must have been cows. So then it can mean cow milk. Okay. Now that we've worked that one out. Yes.
Rather than the point of falsely claiming providership. It's interesting that recently I was speaking with my local writer when he brought up this point that parents, they think they have some proprietorship over their children. And I have never actually
seen it like that, but it was interesting that he brought it up, and I can see now that, you know, we have a strong attachment for our children.
Yeah, yeah.
So unless we see them as devotees, and we want the best for them, obviously.
Yes, yes. I mean, it works. I mean, it can work very nicely. Being a parent and being Krishna conscious and making your children Krishna conscious can work very nicely together. It's not a problem, because kids, you know, take a while to grow up. They're not like the demigods and that they're, you know, they're born and then within a few hours they're 16 years old and they say, see you later, and go off, like that. So, you know, basically you have, you know, now according to the modern law, 18 years, you know, before, you know, technically they're supposed to be able to say that, right? So that someone is parenting them, that's fine. But the point is that where that attachment and control, right? Because proprietorship means you have rights, right? When I say I'm the, you know, it's my land, means I can do with it as I want. But the point is it's not. The child belongs to Krishna, right? So therefore, means what would be within the line of God-approved parental activities, then that you have the right, because it's your duty, not because it's your attachment. You know what I'm saying? Because of attachment, you're given the facility to work within that field. You know what I'm saying? But your rights are what is your duty. You don't have rights beyond your duty. You know what I'm saying? So if, let's say, yeah, okay. So therefore, there's so many considerations that the parent may consider about the child that might be within the range of their rights. You know, generally is within. But sometimes it's just their own attachment, and it actually has nothing to do with benefiting particularly the child or even being Krishna conscious, or the other way around. It's not Krishna conscious, and it doesn't even necessarily actually even materially benefit the child. You know, let's say the child is exceptional in a particular area, and there's an opportunity to go to a special school where they could develop that, but the parent doesn't want, because they don't want to be at home. They don't want to be home alone, right? Because it's boring, right? If the kid's home alone, then they'll make movies out of it. But if the parents are home alone, no one makes a movie.
So many movies.
Right? You ever heard of a movie?
No
a
fun.
Parent, you know, sitting
no
at home?
Fun.
No, it's not. Yeah, so it's not going to happen. So it's boring, right? Does that make sense? Right. So that is not even materially beneficial for the child. So therefore, he'll have to be at home because the parent wants him at home, but the kid wants to be somewhere else. So the kid isn't actually a separate entity as such. The kid is an accessory, you know, accessory to parents' maya, right? You know, so does that mean he becomes implicated by association? You taught the, we went from the social to the legal, yeah. Okay. So therefore, then, but it happens all the time. Because the idea is I'm having children because of my own attachments and need. So then if the child's not there when I want, how I want, then I don't like that. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that then, you know, creates the whole social environment. Does that make sense? So that may work. It works to some... It's less noticeable in the non-Krishna conscious society, just because there is so much distraction and disturbance anyway. But it becomes more of a problem when you bring it in line with Krishna consciousness. But at the same time, it's not just only that becomes a problem. It means anything else that is incorrect also becomes a problem. You know what I'm saying? So, kids not listening to parents, they don't do that in the modern society necessarily anyway. Parents divorcing, that goes on. Fighting over the kids, that goes on. Using the, running a proxy war through the kids between the mother and father, that goes on. Fighting over the kids and facility just because it will bother the other person, not that it will actually be beneficial to the kid, it goes on. people running off with each other's positions, their wives, or, you know, their donkeys, or, you know, whatever it is that happens to be laying around, you know, like that. You know, so, you know, and bring it into the full context. You know. So, does that make sense? So, we won't notice that as much. It's going on now. We have our own community here, and all the things that I mentioned are going on. Right? But we won't notice it so much because of our conditioning. But a child going to Gurukul, that doesn't happen in the modern society. You know, so unless you were one of those families, traditional families, where you went to boarding school and your parents went to boarding school and their parents went to boarding school, and we're those families that, you know, go to boarding school, then only you go to boarding school. Does that make sense? But your common people, boarding school is not an option. They don't think about it.
And have bad experiences from boarding school.
70% of all child abuse happens within the family or close known members of the family. 70%. You understand? So it's always, I always find it very amusing how quickly we write off everything else. Mm. You know what I'm saying? We make it sound like only abuse happens outside the family. Mm. That's because a lot of what's abuse we don't even identify. Mm. You know, you had a bad day and you come home and yell at your kids, technically that's abuse. Because if someone who wasn't you did it, you'd bring it up to the authorities, or you'd go and personally tell them. But if you do it, that's fine. Does that make sense? It doesn't make it any more right, but because of your false sense of proprietorship, you think you have the right. No, you have the right to correctly deal with your child. And if you're doing it, why someone else needs to do it? Does that make sense? So if it's a matter of you're doing it correctly, the other person is doing it, the child won't understand, won't get an effect, better they don't do it. Right? Because you're the one that's responsible to see that they grow up properly. But it's not that the parents, the responsibility is to make them Krishna conscious. Right? Parents have kids because they want that association. Then, since they have them, then they'll try to make them Krishna conscious as long as it fits into their own sense of attachment. You know, and then if it all works out and they're big and married and everything's situated and you have a good relationship with them and everything's going nice, then they'll look back with you know, fondness on their previous, you know, lifestyles and other things like that, which at the time they had nothing good to say about. Right? Yeah. So that's why one has to know what's the position, because that's why the teacher can do things the parents can never do. Because the point is today the child interacts, today you get the gratification. For the teacher, sometimes you have to wait 20 years. Someone just told me yesterday something. But they were no end of trouble when their kid was around. No end of trouble. And that was back in the 80s. So now 2012, right? It's practically 16 years later. Then they had something nice to say. So you have to wait. So that means, you know, the teacher's doing it because that's his duty. The parents are doing it because they're attached. You know what I'm saying? Just like, it's not, foster parents are not famous for being great parents. Right? You have ones, individuals who are good, but generally, if you say someone who are foster parents, generally means, you know, they were basically taken care of. But it's not necessarily there's any deep affection. There might be, but that's very individual. But as a general, not, because they're doing it because, you know, they can relate with kids, or they like the money that comes from it. You know, or both. And some do it just because they want to help kids out, but that's very rare. They generally get awards and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? So the point is the attachment is creating the problem. But because we're right in the middle of the problem due to ignorance, we don't understand it's a problem. Because we don't see the problem. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So we just deal with the present, which is fine, but it's like the dog running across the road. He just sees the other dog that's on his property. So due to attachment, he runs across the road. He doesn't see the truck. So that's what the Shastra is doing, is telling you about the truck. You know, and so that's called birth, death, old age, and disease. So we don't like to hear about it, but the point is if we're engaged in our duties, then it's not a problem. Right? Then our attachments are nicely engaged, they're purified, and everything's glorious. Right? No one's complaining that the Pandavas had 5 sons, or Dhritarashtra has 100 sons. No one's complaining. You know, what the complaint will be is if there's a Duryodhana, the parent wouldn't correct his son because of his attachment. That's Dhritarashtra's weakness. He knows the Shastras. He knows everything. If it's anything other than his son, you can guarantee you can go to Dhritarashtra and get first-class advice. Guarantee. You know, as far as how to run a kingdom, how to manage things, what would be, you know, politically the right thing to do, everything like that.
It's an amazing example of attachment between parents.
Yes, like that. It is. Like
so
that. But,
children are affected.
From our perspective, this, every day is an amazing, how you say, example. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
It's an extreme example.
I will agree that it's an extreme example, but to use it to make one's own example sound better, it would not be safe. Because then it's like, I'm okay, Dhritarashtra had a problem. No, Dhritarashtra is using the extreme example because every aspect of what a general parent is doing is included in what he does. Otherwise, we would say, well, he's attached in this area, but I'm not. So everything that a parent could possibly do based on attachment that wouldn't necessarily be good, you know, Krishna consciousness, he's done. Therefore, every parent can take example from Dhritarashtra. You know, just like, let's say, losing position. If you're emperor of the world, there's no one less than that that can complain, can say, no, my situation's unique, it's different. Right? You know, you have a fight between members of the family. You can't get, there's nothing that's left out in the war between the Pandavas and the Kurus. So that's why these extreme examples are given, so that we can't say we're not included. So, of course, this is another clever way, is that, well, that's extreme and I'm not so extreme. Like that. But the principle is the same. You know, if you go into a shop and steal a $5 something, or go and steal, you know, $1,000, it's still stealing. Of course, the one is more stealing, so you're going to get a heavier punishment. But the same, so the reaction will be greater, but still, that is the principle of stealing, you're still getting the reaction for that. Does that make sense? So that's the point that we're trying to make, is that these false proprietorship is the problem. It's Krishna, so that means if it's our quota, that means someone else can't take it away. You know what I'm saying? At least no one that you can deal with, right? You know what I'm saying? You know, God takes away what he says. It's his. But in other words, others can't take it away. So there's that security of knowing that if I'm performing my duties, then the facility that's generated from my duties is my right to use in the furtherance of my duties. Right? You know what I'm saying? So there's no less, how do you say, security. We may say, no, it is, but then why do you take pleasure in watching other people do things? You're not doing it, but you take pleasure in that. You know, you watch a drama or watch a movie or something. Someone else is doing it. It's someone else's relationship. Do you understand? But we can still deal with it. You know what I'm saying? So it's the same thing. Just because it belongs to God doesn't mean that you can't get the same benefit. Right? It means it never was ours. It's not like it was ours and now somehow or another we've joined this religion and it's saying it's not ours. It never was in the first place. Does that make sense? Yeah, no, it's very deep. So the point is if we understand the principle, then every aspect of it we have some leverage on. Otherwise, if we don't accept the principle, that's why we always start from the principle. Then we get to the detail. If the principle is accepted, then it's a matter of we've already accepted it, now we may have a big problem. One detail, no problem. You know what I'm saying? The other, you know, it's just like, you know, let's say being a member of the golf club is, you know, I mean, at least the third one, it's Maya. Right? Okay, that's easy to give up, you know, like that. You know what I'm saying? But some other things may be more of a problem, you know. So the thing is if we've accepted the principle, then easily we can apply it in areas that does go smoothly, where there's less attachment, where there's no necessity, right? But an area where the attachment is greater, whether we need it or not, then we're willing to at least acknowledge the philosophical points and agree to, you know, make steps in that direction. Does that make sense? So that's important, like that. But, you know, as we say, ultimately it's only because it's connected to Krishna that's important. So the thing of lack of proprietorship is only important because it belongs to God. To say that, you know, nothing in this world is ours because we're here temporarily, we're born, we die, we take nothing with us, we come with nothing, we go with nothing. You know, what is it? From dust we came, from dust we shall be, and all that kind of jazz. So the point is that's nice, but where's God? It's true. But where's God? So therefore, that kind we're not interested in. We're not interested in that kind of more sentimental aspect. You know, pleasant, poetic, thoughtful, thought, you know, provoking, but it doesn't have substance. Because the point is the soul is a servant of God. It's part and parcel of God. He is created. Everything is Him. Right? So, there's no insecurity. Because it belongs to Him, it's always belonged to Him, and He's willing to let you go on in your ignorance and think it belongs to you. And He's sitting in your heart. It means, you know, if we were thinking, you know, He's the guy who's going to, you know, how you say that, you know, how you say, you know, anytime we do something wrong, this thunderbolt will come out, or the lightning bolt will come, a little zop. You know, and then a little pile of ash will be there. But He's sitting in your heart. He sees everything. He sees what nobody else sees. So all the things you think are secret, He knows all of that. Does that make sense? So what's the problem? Somebody like that who knows everything and hasn't already killed you already, so then, you know, He can't be all bad. You know, so He doesn't have the problem that you work with it and have connection with it. It's that you don't recognize its connection with Him. You know what I'm saying? Just like, let's say the husband and wife have a problem, so therefore there's the kids, and then they're fighting over it. Now, it's one thing if they're working out, okay, they're both their kids, how to work it out, what will be best? Okay, for the kids' education, this situation would be better, but on vacation, then, you know, some other, like that, right? And so then but let us say, one party won't acknowledge that the other one has any rights at all. They just don't like the person, don't want to have anything to do with it, therefore is that. They don't consider that the kid likes the person. You know, this is mommy or this is daddy. You know, to them, they're supposed to be all together. There's no such thing as the concept of divorce to a child. It doesn't exist. Right? It's a figment of the adult's imagination. But it doesn't exist. Children, there's no such thing. Because husband and wife is a legal status that you can be married or not. But being somebody's, you know, child, that's as long as your life is. So that person is always your father, that person is always your mother. Now they don't want to live together, that's their stupidity. But as far as they're concerned, it's one family. You know what I'm saying? So this idea is that, no, it's my child, I'll do what I want. No, it's just, where's your right to do that? You understand? So this is the difficulty that comes up, is that all it is acknowledging what's already there. So acknowledging that, yes, I can work with this stuff because God sanctioned it. That's the only reason I have it now. Let's say I have a house. The only reason I have it is because God sanctioned it. So now if I acknowledge that God sanctioned it, and it's His, so He sanctioned it that I use it, you know, and no one else can use it, you know what I'm saying? Then what's the problem? You've just added to it. You haven't lost anything. We look at it as that if I give out the sense of proprietorship, I lose something. No, you've gained something. Because you didn't have, it wasn't yours in the first place. You know, it's like the child, you're going through the store and the child sees something and grabs it. And you're trying to get it away from the child. And they start crying and this and that, right? So, but it's not theirs. Right? And even if it's going to be theirs, let's say whatever's in the child's room, anytime we'll say it's theirs. But is it actually theirs? Technically, it's the parents'. It's the parents' room, it's the parents' bed, the parents' cabinet. You know, the parent went out and bought all the stuff. But it's there. It's the quota for the child to use. The parent is not necessarily going to come in and use the kid's shoes or something like that. You know, what I'm saying? No? Yeah. So that's the position. Do you have any problem with that? Because we're so attached as parents and think it's such a noble and great thing. Right? So therefore it's so noble, then why isn't it noble that God's the parent and we're the children and it all belongs to Him? We're simply His child and this is all...
all we.
Yeah, we're all God's children. Right? Okay? Does that make sense? That's what we're trying to... So this is the fun, is our attachment of being parent can't function with God's position as the parent. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. Like you have these big families, you know, you have the patriarch of the family, the grandmother, grandfather. Technically, the whole thing belongs to them. But, you know, it's comfortable. Everybody has their facilities and this and that. No one's going to complain. So God doesn't have a problem that you have this particular small little part, this one apartment in His unlimited vast realm. It's not, you know, that much square footage is really lost to Him. He's not like those female dragons that watch the, you know, sit in the cave with all the treasure and they know when one piece is missing. You have to remember He's masculine, not feminine. Right? So He's a bit more accommodating. Does this make sense? Are we getting anywhere here? Yeah? So we're adding something. We're not losing anything. Because we're adding that it's ours, but it's ours because God allowed it to be ours. Because if He didn't allow, if Super Soul didn't sanction, we wouldn't get the apartment.
If everything is so simple, then why it's so difficult for us?
We don't like things so simple.
it's because...
No, it's actually pretty straightforward. Just Maya she covers and throws. So because of ignorance, we can't tell that that's what it is. We're so attached that it's not like that. But it's actually, so all we're doing, self-realization, just we're acknowledging that this is actually the way it is. And when you acknowledge it like that, then one can attain real peace. That's the thing, as long as that's accepted. You know, it's just like the guys that, let's say... Yeah. You know, you have it's a rare thing, but you have the theme. The guy is, let's say he's been, you know, he's in jail. Okay? And, you know, there's so many things, you know, he's done wrong and this and that, and they're trying, you know, they're blaming him for, and he doesn't appreciate it. Okay? So is he peaceful? No. But now, you know, the rare theme, then he acknowledges at some point that actually it is his fault. He is responsible. Right? So what is that good ending of that theme? That may be. The point is what is the thing that they bring out? Because you definitely don't see them kill him. What do they bring out?
The remorse?
No.
No. He's peaceful.
He's peaceful. He's adjusted with it, and he has no problem. And then you see everybody else is around because they're still attached to he's the criminal, or they're the justice person, or they're the... Then you see that they are having... He has no problem. You know, it's very rare they use this one, but it's used sometimes. You understand? So the point is when we acknowledge that, yes, it's my attachments and all this and that, then we become peaceful because it's not ours. So... The anxiety that we have to worry about this for ourselves is not there. It's what will be best for Krishna. You know what I'm saying? And therefore, that's why there's quotas, because so many devotees may use the same item very nicely for Krishna, like your car. Everybody could, you know, drive it to the temple. Like that. But that's your quota to drive to the temple, and they want to drive to the temple, they get their own quota. You know, unless you want to, you know, unless you're in LA and you have to carpool or something like that, because you know, you need somebody to sit in the front seat so you can drive in the fast lane, right? You know? No?
Hey.
I've heard of people and they cut out and they put them on the seat. So it looks like, yeah, mannequins, it looks like this whole thing. Yeah.
So we can say that children are affected by secondhand Maya.
Yes. But at the same time, as you're born into that family that has just the right Maya for
exactly.
you. Otherwise, that's why consciousness, the consciousness of the soul and the consciousness of the parent, that's where they match.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Because within someone's consciousness, there'd be so much variety. Mm. But whatever's the consciousness of the time of conception, that matches that particular child. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why if the lifestyle is pure, generally the conception will be pure. You know, that's the whole idea of it. Mm. So it's not just Garbhodan stands on its own. It means someone to do Garbhodan means that there's to be a lifestyle. Otherwise, why would they do Garbhodan? Right. We're getting anywhere here? Right. Nobody feels bad. Well, okay, I just want to make sure. These are can be grumpy inducing topics. You know, yes, one of these, one of these. Okay. I kind of remember we're in this paragraph, right?
Yeah.
We finished the one on the bottom.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Without falsely claiming proprietorship over anything in the world. I mean, anything. That's something. Okay. Is the perfect stage of Krishna consciousness. Okay. One who is situated in this perfect stage knows that because Krishna is the proprietor of everything, everything must be used for the satisfaction of Krishna. Because if we understand it all belongs to Krishna, it will be used for Krishna. If we think it's mine, I'll use it for me. And what's Krishna's is Krishna's, and what's mine is mine. Right? So we're at the temple, that's all Krishna's. We use that. We do a nice service, everything's good. And when we go home, that's mine. I use that for me. No. Real desirelessness is desire for the satisfaction of Krishna. Now we're getting into positive. Because there's the negative of retraction. But then the real thing, this is why we don't have to focus on, right? It means in discussion, because of lack of understanding or due to ignorance, we may take an element of retraction and really go into detail, like we just did here on the point of the parents. The point is, if we see them as servants of Krishna, and our service is as a servant to Krishna, to how to get them best to be Krishna conscious, then automatically retraction is taken care of. Right? It's not a separate endeavor, right? So that's why we don't have to endeavor it as a separate thing. Right? And also, you mentioned all the points, right? And then you said, or is it a separate endeavor? You said that there was something I hadn't thought of. Right? Does that make sense? So you mentioned all the points. They're not that difficult. Right? So it's just, that's what it is. So it's just acknowledging that that's what it is. You know, and rather than, okay, it's all this, maybe it must be something else, because it can't be all this. You know what I'm saying? That's... Does that make sense? Yeah? Right, yeah. Okay. So now is real desirelessness. No, so now we're going to the positive. Real desirelessness is desire for the satisfaction of Krishna, not an artificial attempt to abolish desires, right? Because the retraction, if it's connected to Krishna, then it becomes real, but it's indirect. But when we just see that it's connected to Krishna, then that connection is direct, though the usage of it may have a few steps to get there, you know, like his toothpaste.
Yes.
It took about, what, six steps?
Yeah, something like that.
His took about, what, one or something.
Got
to,
I got
no,
there.
Two, right?
Yeah. I got there.
You got there. You know, so that's the point, is that when one gets it, right? It's not... Okay, so not an artificial attempt to abolish desires. That means abolishing desires by it's not connected to Krishna, just getting rid of the desire, that's good in itself. Right? Being sense-controlled, being culture-based, they stand on their own as something important. No, it's only important because it's connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? But everything connects to Krishna, therefore all good qualities are the natural position. Right? The 26 qualities, generally... Most cultured people of the world would consider at least 25 of them as pretty good. You know? And probably most would also think of being attached to God, you know, the having faith in God. They consider that good. So the 26 qualities wouldn't be seen as bad. The living entity cannot be desireless or senseless. So there's no such thing to say, oh no, you have to give up your desire. Oh, that's not going to happen. Right, that's what we're discussing in the Vedic psychology. That's a misnomer. Common. That we think, oh, the mind's engaged, senses are engaged, no, I have to give that up. No, so you have to engage the mind and senses in positive activities. Because there's no question on stopping activities. That's why it doesn't work. Mayavada and Buddhism don't actually work. Because you can't do that. The living entity means desire. Right, and to express that desire means the senses. Question is whether you want to use the inferior material senses because you think the results of engaging the senses are our own, or you can use the superior spiritual senses because you know the results of engaging the senses are for Krishna. Right, and so therefore, since you're enjoying by someone else being happy, right, which is what we do most of the time anyway. Then, but this is you're dealing with superior elements, so the happiness is so much greater. Yes.
From a gross, rascal, materialistic point of view, it would seem that many Buddhists are very peaceful.
You only see them when they are peaceful.
No.
When they're grumpy, they don't come out. Right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Point is you go into a monastery, right? You go into one of these Buddhist monasteries, how many monks do you see?
I've never been there.
Oh. Anyone's been there?
In Thailand. Thousands of them.
No, in one monastery. When you walk through one monastery, you see a couple. Like that. But there's hundreds that live in there. Right? So they're sitting in their room. So whether they're peaceful or not, you know, they're the, you know what I'm saying?
Maybe we should also
You could try. Make a rule. All grumpy devotees have to stay at home. Only pleasant devotees can come out and go to the temple.
Like the visitors, for sure.
Sorry?
For preaching, greeting the visitors.
Oh, yeah. No, that's there. That's there. But generally, I think we have, some... Yeah. Generally, it means you generally pick somebody who's quite gregarious and stuff anyway. So at least they get an idea that everybody's like that.
Until they join.
Until
they join. Yes. Yeah. But then they find out, this, you know, they're grumpy and everybody else is grumpy. So it's not me. But the point is you have a solution. Like that. You have a solution. Permanent non-grumpiness. A living entity cannot be desireless or senseless, but he does have to change the quality of the desires. So that's all. It's the quality of the desires, not the desire itself. It's the quality. So you were discussing before, the desire for children doesn't have to be changed, but that, you know, that the children are raised in Krishna consciousness, as opposed to just however we like, that has to change. So it's the quality of the desire, or just like you want to eat. But it's the quality of the eating, you know, that you're cooking for Krishna. You know, the standards of that. That's changing. But otherwise, that you're going to cook, you know, go to the market, you know, buy things, you're going to cook, you're going to eat, that doesn't have to change. It's the quality of it, not the activity itself. You know what I'm saying? Do we notice a pattern here? You know, in the philosophy? It's the same thing over and over again. Slightly different angles, slightly different presentations, but we notice that every time we come up, it's as if it's something new. Right? So what does that mean? Means we're very attached to this one simple point. We don't want to give up on it. You know? Okay, it gets smaller and smaller, but we still have some left. It's all still ours. You know?
Yeah.
Now that's what vichar is. Vichar is to discuss from different angles. That's why when somebody asks a question, it's bringing out a different angle. I don't find it's a problem, but the difficulty generally is that the quality of the discussion isn't at the same as what's going on in the assembly. You know what I'm saying? So due to an unfamiliarity or, you know, how you say, whatever, practice or that, it'll go off on a tangent and won't actually deal with the subject matter. So it starts off seeming as if it's a different angle on the same thing, which is nice, because the more angles you look at it, then the more we can kind of like, how you say, you fix it. You know, just like you want to know your location, you get two stars, then you can tell where you are. You know, so that's the whole idea is by more points you can more exactly pinpoint your position and know how to apply the philosophy into your position. So that's why if there is discussion, there is a variety of things, you know, it's considered good, but it should be connected with the topic actually, so it does actually have that effect. Does that make sense? So discussion is the main thing. That's why we say sadhu sangha. It's when we say bhagavatam, you know, hearing, it's hearing and chanting. So both are going on. So if nobody has any questions, somebody's talking, because then Krishna consciousness is going on. But if there's a question or some other points, still Krishna consciousness is going on. Krishna katha is there. The point is to always have Krishna katha. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the different angles are okay. The fun part is they just pick this stuff up. It's just sitting there and they pick it up and start playing it. You know, he's doing stuff like this after about 2 weeks. You know, a materially desireless person certainly knows that everything belongs to Krishna. Ishavasham idam sarvam, Ishopanishad mantra 1. And therefore he does not falsely claim proprietorship over anything. Right? Does not falsely claim, because it's not ours. But we may have as it goes here, Ishavasham, we may have what do you say? Yes, our quota ship over it.
Nigra pastime is the niche is about the quota. Yeah. The Nigra, you know, King Nigra?
Nriga. Oh, Nriga. Okay. I was thinking, King Nriga. King Nigra. Who's King Nigra? Sorry. Then I was thinking of Nigama Kalpataru Galipur. King Nigra. Okay. Yes.
Well, in this pastime.
Yeah.
It's initially about Nikota, is it?
Of Nriga.
The same town.
Oh, yeah. It's a matter of a quota. But it's also, I mean, the quota is there. But here it's just a fault, as every action is covered by fault. Like, even though he did everything so perfectly, still, because it's such a great thing, he's giving away tens of thousands of cows in charity, you know, like this, that somehow or another by management, because who's going to move them around? It's not kings and stuff, it'll be cowherds and other assistants. So then somebody wasn't watching and a cow got back and got gave to another cow, So because of his position and how well he does everything and executes everything, that's the complaint of the Romans. You know, you're taking, you're performing such great work and taking credit for such great work, but such a simple flaw you've allowed to happen. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, it's also just the arrangement of the Lord, because no matter what he tried to do, the Brahmins weren't being pacified. You know, so Krishna had some plan, right? So it worked out. You got personal darshan of Krishna. You know, okay, as a lizard, but hey, you know, at least it's better than most of us.
You know, take, yeah. Take what you can get.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, it means with them, it's the quota. That's the argument is over. You've given it to me, and you've given it to him. You can't do that. So, you know, like that, I kind of. This transcendental knowledge is based on self-realization, namely, knowing perfectly well that every living entity is an eternal part and parcel of Krishna in spiritual identity, and that the eternal position of the living entity is therefore never on the level of Krishna or greater than him. This understanding of Krishna consciousness is the basic principle of real peace. Right? Because all other points will build on this. Right? So he says, that, yeah. Here it says, based on this, knowing perfectly well that everyone's part and parcel, eternal part and parcel of Krishna and the spiritual identity. We're not saying that, you know, his external identity, that's the part we're saying is part and parcel. That's just whatever it is. It is within his laws, but it's not, he doesn't have that spiritual position, because we have to be able to distinguish between material and spiritual. Otherwise, we'll say, okay, well, that means what they're doing is spiritual. That means then anything they do. You always have to make that distinction. Right? And so then it becomes very easy. Does that make sense? We accept that because it means we're able to have these discussions because this principle has been accepted. Right? And then because of that, then these other aspects, okay, that's me, you know, but then, you know, there's the body, okay, I'll kind of get with that. But my stuff, hey. Draw the line there, you know. So does that make sense? You know, so that's the idea. But the one thing is there, and you can kind of chip at it a little bit, you know, erode it a little bit, and then leave it, and then, you know, sometime later, and then erode a little bit more. And then. Got to the next page. Oh, okay, we've got 1 minute.
Last verse of the lesson.
Yeah, 272. That is the way of the spiritual and godly life, after attaining which a man is not bewildered. If one is thus situated, even at the hour of death, one can enter into the kingdom of God. So that's the way of spiritual and godly life. So it means all that's been discussed before, that's the path and everything, then that brings us to that. Then we won't be bewildered. All these things will be very clear to us. You know, that's the difference. Let's say we're expert in a particular area, and some and others are not. What is the difference between our perspective on it and understanding and the person who's not?
It's very clear.
It's very clear. Yeah, it's clear. You can see all the things, know what connects with what does what exactly. But someone else, they can't quite tell, and it all kind of looks the same, and, you know, the Western cliche that anybody Oriental looks all the same, right, to the Westerners. But it's very funny, it doesn't waste a second. Govinda Maharaj was saying that in China they can't tell the difference between him and others because all Westerners look the same. So I thought that was, he thought that was really hilarious.
Yeah.
Because that's always such an American cliche.
Yeah.
All the Chinese look the same. But when he went to China, they thought he was someone else. Like that. He says, you can't tell the difference. He says, all the Westerners look the same. So, like that, one is able to tell the difference. Okay, so, let's see how we do tomorrow. Okay, so I guess we can take these back upstairs.
They look nice.
Yeah, no, they look really nice.
You can still hand them out.
Huh? Oh, you can hand them out. Okay, yes, I hand them out.
60 rupees, please.
Ah, okay. Well, I'll leave it up to you.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Shri Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki,
Jai
Janitai Gaura Premanandi.